listening to The 30 Podcast. Here's your host, Jazz Kang.
All right, welcome to a new episode. The Sixers have won five straight, not an impressive one, over the lowly Orlando Magic on Wednesday. We'll jump into that. But before we do, don't forget, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it, we are there. And of course, check us out at libertyballers.com. We got a ton of talented writers that have you covered for all things Sixers. One of the men behind the Magic there, Mr. Paul Hudrick, joining me for this one. Paul, a 116-106 win over the Magic. Ugly, but a win's a win. When you're looking back at this one, Joel Embiid, 31 points. He's now scored 31 in five straight games. Coincides with the Sixers' winning streak, seven of their last eight. Big game from Seth Curry as well. We didn't see Tyrese Maxey, Shake Milton, Matisse Thybulle, who seems like he's in the league's health and safety protocols for the 47th time this season. But you're looking at this right now. What were your thoughts on the win in Orlando for the Sixers? And now, again, not convincing, but they're starting to get on a bit of a roll here.
For sure. Yeah, it's not pretty. It's not, you know, it wasn't a win that you're going to look back on later down the road and say, hey, remember that great road win in Orlando? I mean, nothing like that, but it is a win is a win. And Doc actually pointed out, and it's actually fair that he pointed this out, that Orlando team is scrappy. They gave Boston a really good game. They gave the Chicago Bulls a really good game. I think they lost by like single digits to both of those teams. So, you know, they fight. They're not a team that you're just going to walk in and beat. And, you know, I love Cole Anthony. Cole Anthony is a guy that I thought the Sixers could possibly have targeted when Tyrese Maxey fell into their laps. I thought Anthony was the guy who would be more likely to fall there, but it didn't work out that way. But I think both teams are happy with the way it did work out. And Franz Wagner, man, that kid can play. He's really good. I know Embiid was really complimentary of him post game, and Mo Bamba looked really good. I mean, I'll say their coach too, Jamal Mosley's done a terrific job. They play hard, they play tough. So yeah, it wasn't the prettiest win on the Sixers calendar. It wasn't wasn't any kind of statement win. It wasn't anything they're going to put on the resume, but it's a win. At the end of the season, it's going to be one of the many that they put up there. And, you know, Joel Embiid wasn't crazy dominant or ridiculous, but he was himself enough. Obviously, as you mentioned, another 30-point performance. Seth Curry, you know, really embracing kind of this point guard role that he's gotten to play with Maxey kind of in and out of the lineup, with Shake Milton being in and out of the lineup. They've used him more. He had 12 assists last night. And if you look over, you know, his last, I don't know, dozen or so games, his assist numbers have been trending upwards. So maybe Doc has kind of tapped into something here with Seth as a passer. I thought Joel Embiid rolled twice, which I know shouldn't sound like a big deal for an NBA big man to roll twice off a pick and roll, but it is for him, because it's not something he does often. It's not something that he appears to enjoy doing, but he did it. And I think it helped Seth a lot too in finding those. I thought it was a bounce back game for Tobias Harris as well. He had 22, 9 of 19 from the field. I think 3 of 6 from 3. His post game comments I thought were outstanding. It was very professional, very classy comments about, you know, how he allowed his, you know, frustrations to boil over, and about how he still loves the fans. And, you know, I thought he really put a bow on all that. And I think everyone could just move on from that. And you know, hope that he is now trending in a good direction. And then I think we have to talk about too, Jazz, the Joel Embiid, Andre Drummond front court. At what point did Doc Rivers decide the role? It won them the game, which is crazy to think about. I mean, they were getting crushed on the boards. That was a big part of the reason why it was a game. Doc Rivers goes to that lineup, kind of has Andre Drummond in that dunker spot, and it worked. They no longer got beat on the boards. They defensively, I thought that was easily their best stretch. Doc Rivers made the joke that they had nothing to run offensively because they just never work with that lineup. So they didn't have any offensive sets. They just scored because both guys played well. So very, you know, hats off to Doc for going to a really unconventional lineup, and it worked really well. To me, that was a stretch of the game that won them the game.
See, two things here, Paul. Number one, see, Doc Rivers, you can make adjustments in a game. You know what I mean? It's going to help. And I agree with you. I mean, you know, looking at how much, I think coming into this one, I was reading that Embiid and Drummond had spent less than 1 minute on the court together so far this season. So obviously that was a big thing, but glad to see him make the move and maybe go against his normal set of rotations. And also, yeah, Doc, what else are you going to call a team that's 7-31 coming into this game? You know what I mean? They're now 7-32. You're going to say they're scrappy. You're not going to be like, damn, the Orlando Magic, oh, they're a crappy team. But no, I'm with you. I think looking at the bigger picture for this one, and you mentioned Seth Curry's playmaking abilities, Yeah, like I mentioned off the top, 12 assists. You're looking around at this. It's been pretty good for the Sixers to be able to get contributions from everyone. And I talked about this on the podcast I did on Tuesday, is that, you know, the Sixers are in a position here where they have a lot of nice pieces to fill out the rotations in terms of coming off the bench. Like, you know, thank goodness I know Furk is getting extra minutes, but, you know, he had 20 in the win last night too, but it seemed like for a month there, he was just completely invisible. Nobody could, you know, he was terrible. And his minutes were cut back accordingly, but you're looking around at this team, and he mentioned Tobias Harris had a better game. They have a lot of nice pieces, but still lacking, I think, that true number two guy behind Joel. And you're looking at Embiid. I think as this continues, you know, he's going to get more and more into the MVP conversation. The Sixers record, I think, at 21-16 is hurting that conversation. But like I said, they have a bit of an easy schedule again for this week. They're going to get on a roll here where they're going to be able to climb up the standings. And you're looking around, I mean, what you'd give DeMar DeRozan, obviously Steph Curry, I think, is probably at the top of the list right now. But when you're looking at what the Sixers can do, let's just say hypothetically, we're going to jump into some Ben Simmons trade talk shortly here. But when you're looking at what the Sixers have right now, and you're looking at this with, okay, clearly Joe is number one in the pecking order on the roster. Depends on who you have number two. It could be Tyrese Maxey some games, Tobias Harris, Seth Curry, but you have those three guys. And then you got, you know, Danny Green, Shake Milton. You have a pretty strong roster in terms of having depth. But when you look at the Sixers as they're constructed right now, Paul, what do you think the ceiling is for this team? Let's just say they don't make another move, and this is the roster they go with. Everybody's healthy. Come time for the playoffs, how far do you think this squad can get as is right now?
First, I want to say Furkan Korkmaz, I'm glad you mentioned his name, because he did not shoot well in the first half, but he was very big in the third and fourth quarter as well. Hit a couple of big threes, made a couple of big shots and a big plays to kind of get them kind of right the ship there and get them some offense when they were really struggling on that end of the floor. So definitely Korkmaz is a guy the last two has been much better after a really, really, really tough stretch for a while there. So I definitely want to mention his name. But I think what you're saying, Jazz, is on point, and I think it's a big reason why a lot of people ask, why has Daryl Morey not pulled the trigger? Why have they not just moved on? Even apparently the head of the Players Association now, Michelle Roberts, is wondering why they are not just moving on. And I think your point is why. I think they have a lot of good pieces. They have depth. And it's something that is the result of very good drafting. When you look at Tyrese Maxey, Matisse Thybulle, although that was a trade, but clearly it was a guy they targeted in the draft. Shake Milton, Furkan Korkmaz, Isaiah Joe. These are homegrown guys that they drafted, and Furk, you know, I mentioned Furk as well. I think their depth is a big reason why you haven't seen a trade, because they're not interested in more good pieces. They want a great piece. And I think that's the issue here, is that great piece, just quite frankly, really isn't available, or the pieces that maybe you would classify as great don't fit. You look around the league, Damian Lillard is not available, and there's a chance he might even get abdominal surgery and be out for the rest of the season. Bradley Beal currently, right now, as of today, as of January 6th, is not available. Maybe that changes. Same with a guy like Jaylen Brown. So, I mean, there are guys that could be available, but just maybe quite aren't yet. And then other guys like, you know, a Domantas Sabonis with the Pacers, it's a weird fit with Joel Embiid, quite frankly. I mean, yeah, it's very nice that they played Embiid and Drummond together last night, and it happened to work. And I think even in the regular season, Embiid and Sabonis could take you pretty darn far. I think they could win a lot of basketball games just with that talent increase. But I think as the playoffs go on, that fit would be a little bit awkward and a little bit clunky. So I think what you're touching on is the reason why Ben Simmons is still here. Daryl Morey isn't interested in good players. He's interested in a great player that could play alongside Joel Embiid. And then to kind of answer your question about where they are, I think that's another layer to this, is that right now, I think they are a second round, as constructed, I think they are a second round team. I think they are no worse than fourth in the conference. I still stand by that. I think, you know, clearly the Nets and the Bucks are the class of the conference. Maybe you put Miami third. Chicago is a team that I think is very good, but the Sixers have already beaten them twice, and I do think that they're going to see some regression as the season goes on. I think they're a good team, not a great team. So I still think that I still stand by that. I think the Sixers are no worse than the fourth team in the conference, and I think they're a second round exit. I think that's their ceiling right now as they're constructed. So if you're Daryl Morey, you have to make a trade that you believe makes you better than that. Because otherwise, what are you doing? You know? So I think that's the tightrope that kind of Morey is trying to navigate. And I think those are the biggest factors as to why Ben Simmons is still a Philadelphia 76er.
See, I you're going back to Chicago, Paul. I like DeMar DeRozan. I like Lonzo Ball. I like Zach LaVine. But they give me like 2015 Atlanta Hawks vibes. You know what I mean? Like they're going to be there. They might have a good regular season. The conference isn't as weak as it was then that they'll get to the conference finals. But I'm with you. I think it's the Nets, the Bucks. Obviously, Kyrie made his debut on Wednesday for Brooklyn. So they're going to be getting better. And as they get their chemistry going and he gets, you know, into, although he played pretty well, had 22 points. But I mean, you're looking at that team, but I'm with you. You're looking around at the conference. Like I like Miami. I think they're going to be a scrappy, tough team to see. Scrappy. That's thank you, Doc Rivers, for helping me describe that. But I think they're going to be another team that the Sixers have to worry about, but I'm with you. I think, you know, if they can take advantage, and you're looking at the upcoming schedule, their next 15 games, Paul, they only play two teams who are in a playoff position, not a play-in position, in a playoff position. One is the geriatric Lakers, who are sitting in sixth now in the Western Conference, and then they got one game against Miami, and that's it. Right. So you're looking at this schedule coming up, and we mentioned how they kind of have had failed to. I mean, mind you, playing without your best player in Joel Embiid. That obviously is going to have a toll on any team in the NBA, but this is going to give an opportunity for the Sixers to climb back up into the conversation for potentially having the best record in the Eastern Conference. So that's one thing I do want to keep an eye on now as we get up towards the trade deadline, which is on February the 10th. The Sixers have a very favorable schedule. And if you're looking at the imbalance of it all, and we know this, that teams tend to be better at home in the NBA than they are on the road. You're looking at the Sixers only played 15 of their 37 games at home so far. So they're going to start having this, more time in Philly, more time at Wells Fargo, where they're going to be able to hopefully rack up some wins and get into the conversation with the Bulls, the Nets, and the Bucks at the top of the East. You did mention the Ben Simmons stuff about the roster. Let's jump into Sam Amick of The Athletic, his report, where he detailed some of the recent trade talk in the NBA, and he did touch on Simmons as well. So we'll do that after a short break. All right, and we're back. Paul, we're talking about the Sixers roster, and we said they're very good. And you mentioned that Daryl Morey's not interested in good basketball players. He's interested in great basketball players. So I don't know if this would constitute as a great basketball player, but Sam Amick of The Athletic came out with a report saying that the Sacramento Kings, who are, can we agree on this, Paul, that they are the worst franchise in the league? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with the results, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't been in the playoffs for going on, 16 seasons now, 16 years now. So, I think that's a fair assessment. When you're looking at this squad, and Amick mentions that they're looking at making some deals and looking at making some moves in terms of trying to at least maybe get in a play-in game or something at the most. The Kings right now currently sitting outside the play-in picture, only half a game behind the San Antonio Spurs, but he mentioned Tyrese Halliburton, De'Aaron Fox, who's on a max deal right now, and Tyrese Halliburton, obviously, in his second season in the league. But you're looking at that as a potential package for Simmons. What do you think of either of those players? I know we've touched on this before, but now we're going to start getting some more rumors swirling around the NBA about trade talk because things are starting to calm down at least a little bit in terms of having to sign emergency players given how the Omicron thing has kind of decimated rosters around the leagues. But you're looking at De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton. What did you think of that when you read this? And does that move the needle for you at all in terms of, okay, like we mentioned, if they get a Tyrese Halliburton and maybe some future assets in terms of a first round pick or two, would you be happy with that return from Ben at this point?
Yeah, I to start with Fox, you and I have talked about Fox before. Like I was told, before the season started that Fox was a guy that they had no interest in. And so I can't imagine with the season he's had so far that view has changed. I just don't think he is a guy that they view as a fit with Joel Embiid because he's, he's not a great 3-point shooter. Defensively, he's just very poor on that end of the floor. So I just don't see how that works when you consider how he'd have to fit with Joel Embiid as a non-shooter, and then also how he'd have to fit in a backcourt with a Seth Curry as a non-defender. I don't know how that would work. So I think that's part of the reason. And also the redundancy a tad with Tyrese Maxey, who I think you could already make an argument. Tyrese Maxey is already a better shooter than De'Aaron Fox is, which is crazy to think about. And I think that their skill set is a little redundant. I actually think that potential-wise, I could see Max, and also Maxey plays defense. He's a pretty darn good defender, and he shows a lot of effort on that end. So I think you could make the argument that at some point, Tyrese Maxey might become a better version. He's not right now, but he might become a better version of De'Aaron Fox. So does that make sense in a trade? To me, no, it does not. And then on top of that, you know, when you look at the rest of the roster, the Halliburton one is one that it's intriguing. Now, to me, if I'm being honest, I don't think he moves the needle for Daryl Morey. But when you look at his recent stretch without De'Aaron Fox in the lineup and you see what he's done, he's a pretty darn good player. And it's a guy that a lot of people like is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from the Thunder. And I get that. Halliburton gives me a little bit of a similar vibe to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think there are some similarities. He's a little bit younger, so not quite as developed and still going to take a little bit of time. And, you know, you're counting on a lot of youth if you're going with Maxey and Halliburton. But I will say for me personally, if I get the call from Monty McNair and he says, okay, Halliburton, Buddy Hield for Simmons, and that's where the trade starts talk, my interest is peaked. He has my attention at that point. I don't know if that's what gets it done for me, but when I look at Halliburton and what he can do now and how he could help this team now, and also that he's still a valuable asset that you could perhaps, you know, these deals that you're talking about, whether it's Bradley Beal, whether it's Damian Lillard, whether it's Jaylen Brown, those talks aren't dead because you still have a really talented young guard in Tyrese Halliburton that you could dangle to a team. And then on top of that, Buddy Hield, you know, I know he was kind of a popular target this past offseason. Some people thought, you know, the Tobias Harris, maybe that was a fit there. And I, you know, still maybe in the future wouldn't be a terrible fit in a trade. But Buddy Hield has been pretty good this year. He's kind of gotten lost in the fact that the Kings have been so bad and they're going in a really bad direction. And he does make a lot of money, but he takes over 10 threes a game and makes almost 40%. That is an astronomical number. Yeah. On top of that, I think you've seen, if you watch Buddy Hield at all, he's been a little bit better with the ball in his hands, a little bit better off the dribble. And I also think he looks like he's in the best shape of his young career. So if you dangle Halliburton and Hield at me for Ben Simmons, it gets my attention for sure. I don't know that it gets it done in Daryl Morey's eyes, but yeah, I would be interested in that being the framework of a deal.
Yeah, you mentioned Tyrese Halliburton. You look at his numbers so far this season. I think he addresses, like you mentioned, I think Maxey is going to be just going to get better and better over the next, you know, 3 or 4 years till he kind of hits what he is as an NBA player. But you look at Tyrese Halliburton as a guy who hasn't been the primary ball handler in terms of when he's on the court with De'Aaron Fox, although he does, I mean, they do alternate, but majority of the time, Fox is the ball dominant one out of those two. He's putting up almost 7 assists a game. And you're looking at that where playmaking has been an issue for the Sixers from the perimeter. He's a guy that obviously will address that. And, you know, I covered the Kings last season, unfortunately, but Tyrese Halliburton was, a big surprise. And you look at what this guy can do. And just in terms of his three-point shooting, he's shooting above 43%. For the year from deep, 41.9% for his career, obviously, as I mentioned, just in his sophomore season. But you mentioned a guy like Buddy Hield, you know, numbers wise, that could work in terms of his contract. He's not on this bloated deal where, you know, again, no disrespect to Tobias Harris, where he's obviously overpaid for what he's producing. You're looking at Buddy Hield only making $20 million next season, then down to $18 in 2023-24 before he becomes a free agent. So I think numbers wise, that would give the Kings some wiggle room. And if you know, the Sacramento Kings have all their first round picks for the next 5 years. So you might be able to maybe entice Monty McNair to give in one of those two. And again, then you're looking at, hey, can we repackage Halliburton plus a Kings pick plus to get a big name guy if they do become available in the offseason. But if you're looking at that, let's just say hypothetically, Paul, they do make this deal. Daryl Morey's like, all right, you know what? I don't want to waste a year of Joel Embiid's prime. He's playing like an MVP candidate. We got, as we mentioned before, we got a ton of depth on this roster in terms of guys like George Niang, who I think has been a revelation for the Sixers this year. But, you know, you mentioned Shake Milton, Andre Drummond, Matisse Thybulle. You can go down the line, Danny Green, all these proven NBA guys. If they do make a deal, let's say, and they bring in Halliburton, they bring in Buddy Hield, where would you put the Sixers ceiling then with a roster that is completely healthy going into the playoffs? You mentioned they're a second round team now. Does that maybe bump them up into a conference finalist? Does that maybe put them in the upper echelon of that? You could look at this team and being like, they're going to be in the NBA finals. Where would you put the Sixers with everything, you know, all things considered, they're healthy, they're normal and going into the playoffs, but they have Halliburton and Buddy Hield.
I just want to reference this one stretch by Halliburton that I was discussing. I don't know that all of these games without De'Aaron Fox. This was a recent 8-game stretch. He averaged over 20 points a game, over 10 assists a game, a steal and a half per game, while he shot 51% from the field, 51% from three on 5.6 attempts, and 88% from the line. So I think that's the glimpse of what he can be when he's not playing with De'Aaron Fox and he's got the ball in his hand. So just to kind of preface what I'm talking about when I see like the potential in Halliburton and what he can be. But yeah, I think that's the issue, Jazz, and where I don't think that Daryl Morey will do this. Me as a person looking at it objectively as a basketball fan and someone who covers the sport, it's something that would intrigue me, but I don't know that Morey does it because I don't think it makes them any better than a second round team. It's possible it does, but that would have to mean that Tyrese Maxey and Tyrese Halliburton have really figured it out as a backcourt, that it all works well with Seth Curry as well. That to your point, Tobias Harris has you know, done at least somewhat regained his form from last season, that Joel Embiid is healthy and continues to play at the level we've seen, this MVP type level, and that all these bench guys are continuing to play well. Although throwing Hield into that mix definitely helps. So it would be too many question marks to say that they are any better still than a second round team. I think that's what they are, but I think they would be a better team than they are today. And again, the possibility of you perhaps moving Halliburton in the offseason is not impossible, and maybe packaging him in a deal to get one of those top echelon guys so that next year you come back at it and maybe then you're in a discussion where you're no longer a second round team, and then maybe you're a team that could possibly go to the Eastern Conference Finals and beyond.
So Paul, you're basically Daryl Morey's puppet at this point, right? That's what we refer to you as, that you have to have a superstar. You are not willing to accept anything less than that at this point.
Not for me. No. Like I would, like I said, if I get that call, I would listen. I would not hang up. That framework would interest me. But I'm not quite sure it interests Daryl Morey. I'm just trying to be honest with what I was, from the little bit I have gleaned from the organization, from the people I've spoken to, with the way the Sixers are thinking, that to me doesn't seem like a deal that they're going to do, but we'll see what happens. A lot can change. Maybe Daryl Morey was watching some of those 8 games that Halliburton played in, and that piqued his interest a little bit. So who knows?
See, I here's my thing too. I think I'm looking at Halliburton as a similar piece. I'm not saying that their games are similar, because they're clearly not, but Halliburton and Maxey are two guys that I look at that I think are at similar points in their careers, and not in terms of just like where they're like, hey, you know, we're second year guys, but you know, both 21 years old. And like I mentioned, like for Halliburton, he has this, like, you know how where Tyrese looks like he's just going 100 miles a minute all the time. You know what I mean? Like he's just, when he's driving and he's so quick and fast, Halliburton's very methodical. Right. He'll try and take his time. He'll read the defense. He's not going to kill you with his speed. But when he turns the corner off a pick and roll, you know, he's slow and he's waiting to see what opens up, and he'll find the open man. And I think both of them are similar in the sense that, you know, maybe not next year, not 2 years from now, but 3 years from now, they'll be knocking on the door of being all-stars. You know what I mean?
That's a perfect assessment. It really is. No.
Yeah. Like I don't see them being like, oh, you know, these guys are going to play in, you know, 15 consecutive all-star games or 10. I think, but you know, they'll get to a point where they can play maybe 2-3 all-star games each at the peak of their careers. And so again, I don't think it's a terrible deal, but given the fact that where the Sixers are and where Joel Embiid is as clearly the guy in Philly, I think Morey, again, looking at the short and long run, has to make a deal that maximizes the organization's championship window. Paul, we'll wrap up on this. You're looking at this now. As we mentioned, we're now officially less than 5 weeks away from the trade deadline. Haven't heard a ton. I mean, Sam Amick's report was really the most recent one that we've had, and it feels like in forever about a rumor or even mentioning Ben Simmons' name. But when you're looking at this, do you ultimately, yes or no, do you think a deal is going to get done for Ben before the deadline, or are we looking at this thing dragging out into the offseason?
It's still such a big if to me, because it, over the course of those 5 weeks, the Washington Wizards could lose 10 straight games. The Boston Celtics could lose 5 straight games, and Al Horford and Jaylen Brown could come to blows or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, it's just a lot can happen between then and now. So I think it's going to factor in a lot of what happens with other teams, what happens with other teams around the league. I will say that a team like Sacramento imploding and looking to perhaps, you know, blow up their foundation only serves to help the Sixers, because it's just one more team and a group of more players that could, because like maybe we're both right in that, you know, Halliburton's age and he doesn't quite fit the timeline, but perhaps he fits someone else's timeline. 3 or 4 team trade deal, you get the guy you want. You know what I mean? So I mean, it's possible that, you know, what do the Washington Wizards think of De'Aaron Fox? Maybe they really like De'Aaron Fox. Maybe there's a way you can do a 3-team deal where Beal comes to the Sixers and they get De'Aaron Fox and some picks or something. Like, it's not, I think sometimes we all have a tendency to kind of look at things very black and white when there is so much gray. And I've said along, I really do think it's going to be a super complicated, weird trade with 3 or 4 teams that's going to eventually be the deal. So will it get done at the deadline? I have zero idea. And I don't even think Daryl Morey knows whether or not 100% he's going to pull the trigger or not. Because I think, too, the other thing, we've talked a lot about Joel Embiid and his prime and not wanting to waste it. And I get all of that. But you also, you don't want to go all in for this season and then waste the rest of his prime. He is still locked into a long-term contract. And then the other thing I'll say is, Joel Embiid isn't complaining right now. Joel Embiid is fine. He's playing great. The team is winning games. So I think we're all kind of speaking for him as if he is mad, or if he, like, he feels like they're wasting his prime, when he's given zero indication that that is the case. So I think that's the other thing that's a factor here. I think it's the big, one of the bigger factors is that Daryl Morey and Joel Embiid have a trust level with each other. And I think until it gets, if it gets ugly at some point, maybe that changes. Maybe Joel Embiid goes to Daryl Morey and says, listen, man, you have to get me some help. I can't do this anymore. But I just don't think we've reached that stage. And I don't know that we will before February 10th.
Well, maybe they can just sign Antonio Brown, right, Paul?
That's a, yeah, because you know what? I haven't had nearly enough drama in my Sixers run to report on a guy like that.
I just saw in the pipeline that they officially got terminated. It's like, that's not a big surprise. But no, I'm with you. I think that you're looking at Joel, and he clearly seems to be, I don't want to say content, because who knows, you know, there might be stuff going on behind closed doors, and I'm not insinuating that there is, but he seems fine. He's like, you know, he loves playing for this team. He loves playing in front of the fans. He loves playing for the organization. So, you know, giving the trust to Daryl, who, as we've mentioned, you know, maybe not has been the lead architect of a championship squad, damn near almost got there with Houston, but we've seen him go big game hunting. And so I'm just interested to see how this whole thing is going to play out. And, you know, given what the league has been through in terms of losing so many players to the virus stuff and being in health and safety protocols, where clearly that took away attention, where, you know, GMs are having to come up with guys who, like, Isaiah Thomas hasn't played. When's the last time he played in the NBA? You know what I mean? And so the focus has been on figuring out that. I think now we're going to start seeing a little bit more trade chatter. And again, for us, from a content point, which is great. So we're looking forward to the next 5 weeks to discuss the Sixers. That'll do it for this episode. As I mentioned, we're going to be giving you new episodes pretty much 5 days a week off the top. So subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. Always appreciate a 5-star review. If you feel inclined to give us one, if you want to give us a 1-star review, that's up to you, but maybe not do it publicly. Also, if you're curious, Sean will be back with the Talking About podcast coming up after the Sixers go for their 6th straight win against San Antonio on Friday. And then, Paul, when you're looking at this, so quickly before we do wrap up here, San Antonio, Houston, Charlotte, home against Boston, at Miami, at Washington, home to Orlando, home to the Clippers. Do you think the Sixers can go on a double-digit win streak here? They're already at 5.
It seems entirely possible with the way they're playing and the way, I should say, the way Joel Embiid is playing. And they're kind of, nobody's really in a good place, obviously, as far as injuries and as far as the health and safety protocols. But the Celtics or the Sixers are in a better place than a lot of other teams, because their best player has already gone through it and they've already had a bunch of guys go through it. And, you know, hopefully you get Tyrese Maxey, you get Matisse Thybulle back here in the near future. And I mean, they're going to be in pretty good shape as far as that goes. So, and as you mentioned, a lot of games at home. This is a team that has won a lot of home games in the past. So, if it's not a double digit win streak, I could certainly see like 10 of 11 or like 11. It's like, I think they're very capable of that here in the month of January.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like I said, I think they're gonna go on a run here and climb up the Eastern Conference standings. That'll do it for this episode. Mr. Paul Hudrick, as I mentioned, one of the people behind the Magic. You see at libertyballers.com. Also, if you haven't heard yet, Paul and I are doing a live streaming show. You can catch that on Twitter, our YouTube page. That comes up every Monday at noon, so don't forget to check us out there as well. As I mentioned, Sean will be back with the Talking About podcast on Friday. That'll do it for this one. We'll catch up with you all next time.